We'll start this morning on a bright note. For those who do not know, today is Rita Geller's birthday, and she's not 79, let's just say that. So, if we had, we would do a flash mob outside of her house, but she's in Florida, so we're thinking of her. So you should call her or text her. Some lange yarn. So that's a good place to start. And then such a little bit of a not such a good place to start, which is going to be the focus of our discussion, our lima this morning. I don't think so. Do we not have enough? All right. I'm sorry. So we've been focusing on different svarim and different machabrim of those svarim. So I chose this sefer to learn this week, a piece of Torah for this week, because the title of the sefer was Me'inyana D'Yoma. So this is the second time, you know, thank God this chabura has grown since we started several years ago. So the first member of this chabura who we lost was Mr. Rosen, Olav Shalom. So that was one loss that we had. But this week, when I look at the table, and I see at the end of the table, Reb David Lennon, Zichron Levracha, is not here. So you really feel a sense of loss. You know, the Gemara says, Echa mimnei chabura shemes yida kol chabura. So on so many levels, so many concentric circles, so our chabura is not the same. Our shir is not the same. And so I wanted to focus this morning on a sefer that when I thought about what sefer we would choose, I thought of this sefer. The sefer is called Noam Elimelech. And we're going to talk a lot about the author of this sefer. But the title of the sefer was why I chose it for this morning. Because the word Noam has, I think, great significance and great meaning when you think about David Lennon, Zichron Levracha. The pasuk refers to David HaMelech, as Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael. That the quality of David, right? David HaMelech had so many qualities. He was a leader, he was a king, he was a warrior. A lot of different attributes that David HaMelech had. But he was also a poet and a singer, a zamar. And when you think about the quality of Zimra, so the context is so important in terms of understanding that word Noam. Right, it's referred to, David HaMelech is referred to as Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael. So Zimra, what's the quality that goes with Zimra? It's Ne'imus. It's pleasantness. It's a niceness, a gentle sense about them. Even though David HaMelech, when he was a warrior, he was incredibly brave, incredibly fierce. But when it comes to Zimra, when it comes to song, David HaMelech was referred to as the Noam. So you think of David Lennon, say he was such an Ish Noam. He was such a pleasant person, right? Every time you saw him, it was always upbeat, positive, such tremendous equanimity. And of course, he was a Bal Menagin. He was a Chazan, he was a Bal Tefillah, he was a Bal Kore. So when I was thinking in my mind, well, what sefer are we going to focus on this week? So Lezichro, we speak about the sefer Noam, the Noam Elimelech, and with the ne'imus of David Zelig ben Hillel, Shneshama Shadav and Aliyah. So we focus on some of those qualities this morning when we think about and we learn from the life of David Lennon, and we're going to miss him very much in our lives in this chabura. So the family should have a lot of chizuk and nechama. So the story of this sefer, of the Helig Noam Elimelech, begins, I would say, in the 14th century. Begins in the 14th century because at that time, the Jews were being expelled from France, right? 1306 was the major expulsion of Jews from France. And so the migration, the intense and focused migration from Western Europe to Eastern Europe really takes hold in the 14th century, and Jews are moving past Austria, past Germany, into Poland. Now, How to define Poland is also a tricky question, because every 5 minutes the borders are being reshaped in some form or fashion. But let's just speak about Poland generally. And by the 16th century, there were so many Jewish communities in Poland that they were able to organize in an autonomous fashion under a kahal system, a community system, whereby the kahal had a shtadlan. Shtadlan is meaning an advocate. They had kind of like their own, advocate or a governor or something like that on their behalf, on the kahila's behalf. And that was organized under a huge umbrella organization called the Var Arba Aratzos, the Council of the Four Lands. So that was a very unique period in Jewish history, that between, let's say, the 16th century and the 17th century, Jews, although they didn't have many rights, but at least they had self-governance to a large degree, and they were able to manage their own affairs. Just the Var Arba Aratzos set the policies for the Jewish communities, and the Var Arba Aratzos was stretching, depending on exactly the time, potentially all the way from Lithuania down here. Well, I guess, you know, the names are relative to us, but let's say toward Hungary. And they collected taxes from the Jews, and they gave the taxes to the Polish overlords, to the Polish noblemen. And that was how the Jews ran their system of government. And everything was fine. I guess relatively fine if you live in abject poverty, but okay. Until the 17th century. And then there was a terrible period of huge strife, not specifically having anything to do with the Jews, having to do with the Polish noblemen and Ukrainian peasantry, and a major war between these two groups. And unfortunately, as was not uncommon, who got stuck in the middle? The Jewish people were stuck in the middle, the Jewish communities in Poland and in Ukraine. And in 1648, 1649, we experienced what we now call the Chmelnytsky massacres. Chmelnytsky was the Cossack leader was battling the Polish noblemen, and the Jews were stuck in the middle. Initially, they said that the Jews were siding with the Polish, and that's why they were very angry with the Jews, but the Polish noblemen largely rejected the Jewish people, so they were kind of hung out to dry, and they were massacred in huge numbers, tens of thousands of Jews, and we have chronicles of these massacres. The earliest of these is known as the Yevane Metzula from Rav Nosson Hanover. So there was a terrible decimation. There was also an increase in blood libels. Right? This is before what we know today. You know, we are very familiar today with anti-Semitism. In those days, you didn't have anti-Semitism like you have it today. Today, you have what's post the late 19th century anti-Semitism, which is, you could call, racial anti-Semitism. In those days, it wasn't racial anti-Semitism. It was Christian anti-Semitism. It was religious anti-Semitism. And Poland was a heavily religious culture, and so there were many other places in Europe and other places in the world, there were blood libels. So between the intense poverty and the persecution, the Var Arba Aratzos at this point is smashed to pieces, and Jews are on the run. Many great machabrim, many great rabbanim are affected along with these communities. If it would be a fascinating one year on Tisha B'Av, we touched on this a little bit, those of us who learned together. The Shulchan Aruch, if you just look at the Shulchan Aruch itself, the Shulchan Aruch is like a page of Chmelnytsky massacres. Because on the one hand, you have the Taz, Reb David HaLevi, he was personally affected. On the other hand, you have the Shach, he had to run away. The Shach himself, the Shach was a great genius, great rabbinic luminary, Reb Shabtzai Cohen. He wrote a 4-page small monograph about his experiences in the Chmelnytsky massacres and on the run. He died as a young man. I think he was only 40 years old. He was a giant, absolute giant. So this, it's called Megillas Eifa. And he writes what was going on at this time. So then you have the Magen Avraham. I think the Magen Avraham had a son who was killed in the Chmelnytsky massacres. Another commentary in the Shulchan Aruch. Then you have the Ber Hagola, Rev Rivka's. So he had to run away from Lithuania. It's really mind-boggling when you think about the impact, the scope of the impact on the population. Tens of thousands of communities were massacred. And then you look at it through the scope of the lens of learning, and you see the impact that it had on the great Chachamim all across Poland and Ukraine and Lithuania. It's just devastating. Absolutely devastating. That's one backdrop that we have. And then we have another important backdrop. And that is that in the 16th century, in Tzfat, there was a great tzaddik, an incredibly pious and spiritual man. Is known as the Ari HaKadosh. So the Ari brings to the world a new understanding of life. he reveals to us the secrets of the Kabbalah, of the hidden mystical tradition in Judaism. And this creates a tremendous fervor, and Tzfat, for example, becomes a very important center of the study of Kabbalah and mysticism by many great Jewish thinkers and leaders. The Ari has many Talmidim who themselves have Talmidim. If you go to Tzfat today, you'll see a huge influence of the Beis Medrash of the Ari HaKadosh. That was all fine and good until a man was born in 1626. He died in 1676. His name was Shabtai Tzvi. So Shabtai Tzvi is getting into this whole mystical environment, playing on the I don't want to say hopelessness, but like the despair of many Jewish communities, fanning the flames of this mystical tradition and these new teachings and the despair, and saying, guess what? I'm the Mashiach. And he has a disciple, Nathan of Gaza, who goes around spieling arois, telling everybody, this is the Mashiach. He did mofsim. He does some tricky, strange things. Matir isurim, matir asurim, like a lot of weird things going on. But people believed, including many rabbinic figures throughout Europe. Many did not, but many did. And then, at the end of his life, in Turkey, he's caught by the Muslim officials. He converts to Islam, and there is a huge crisis. A worldwide spiritual crisis, because Shabtai Tzvi, it takes time, becomes exposed as a false messiah. He's a charlatan. And this has, on a spiritual side, absolutely devastating effects on European Jews, who are now not only crushed physically, but they're also crushed spiritually. And it leads to this almost, I don't want to use a borrowed term that will sound harsh, but in the wake of this Shabtai Tzvi, there's also almost like a McCarthyist type of hunt, a reaction against people who may or may not, and I don't use it in the same method as McCarthyism, because that has a whole level of connotation, but just the intensity of the backlash now against Shabtai Tzvi and people who might look like Shabtai Tzvi for decades later. One of the most famous disputes in Europe, in rabbinic life, is between Rav Gaon, Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz, and Rav Yaakov Emden. What was Rav Yaakov Emden's chief complaint against this great Talmud Chacham, this great mystic, this great Torah giant? Was he was secretly a Sabbatian. And this is decades later. But the impact of that betrayal was hugely felt. And then the third thing that we can put into the mix is that what had developed in many of these poor peasant countries, in Poland, in Eastern Europe, in Ukraine, in Belarus, what we call today, was a development of kind of like a class system where people didn't have any means by which to educate in a mass scale. Obviously, there were systems of education, but the idea of Torah learning, as we know it today, we get together on a Sunday morning and we have opportunity to learn Svarim. You can go to the Beis Medrash here, the Kol has a Beis Medrash, many Batei Midrashim, and we're living in a time where Torah is accessible to everyone, and high-level Torah learning is accessible to everyone. But at that time, it was somewhat stratified, and there were single individuals. Now, there weren't like classical yeshivas as we know them today, but there were malamdim, and the students who excelled went to small different, but basically, Talmud Torah was reserved for the elite. And then you had, left in that wake, was a huge swath of an ignorant mass who were very often pious. This is before the Enlightenment, so it wasn't necessarily educated in any way. But there was a huge gap between what was perceived as the great scholars and the small class of rabbinic scholarship and the Hamon Am, just the average person. So into this walks a great tzaddik, a great Talmud Chacham, a pious man, whose name was Rabbi Yisrael ben Eliezer, later known as the Baal Shem Tov. He was born around the year 700. Baal Shem Tov dies in the year 1760. And the Baal Shem Tov creates a revolution in Torah life. And the Rabbona Shel Olam, you know, works in very interesting ways. Rav Kook has an idea, an important idea in the beginning of Orot, where he talks about the development of the world. That on the one hand, there are what we see as called sibot chitzoniot. external stimuli, things that happen in the world, trends that develop because certain things. So for example, why did World War I happen? Well, you could say World War I happened because Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated. So that's why World War I happened. You could also say World War I happened because of a whole other set of factors that went into it. And those are also true, sociological, historical factors. But Rav Kook would say that there is a force, an internal force that guides the life of the world, that the Rabbono Shalom orchestrates. Forget about the chitzoniot, the external stimuli of what happens in life, and especially on a macro level. These things happen because the Rabbono Shalom is driving the world. He's running the world in a certain way, and this is a manifestation of how the Rabbono Shalom wants the world to move forward. Now, how we understand that? We don't know. But all these things, and we can look at them in that light and try to draw from them, try to understand from them. Every ism, you know, the development of communism, what did that mean? What does that trend say from a Sibot Panimiot? It's a good question, you know. Socialism, feminism, World War, different kinds of phenomena that exist in the world. There are sibos pnimios. There are internal reasons that the Rabbono Shalom has these things occur. So the Rabbono Shalom brings the world of Hasidus onto the scene right on the money, so to speak. Because now this new approach in Avodas Hashem, which in certain respects is new and in certain respects is not new at all, it totally revolutionizes the world of Eastern European Jews. And that's the world of the Baal Shem Tov, the world of Chassidus. So what is Chassidus about? So we mentioned this mashal once before. Reb Zev Reichman has a beautiful introduction to Chassidus called Flames of Faith, where he writes how, I forgot, I think it was from Reb Zev, who was it from? I think it was from the Zidichov Rebbe, who said that when the Ariya Kodesh came and revealed to us the world of the Kabbalah, so he was trying to bring us, human beings, up to the Rabbono Shalom. And what the world of Chassidus did, what the Baal Shem Tov did, was he took that same concept of Chassidus, of Kabbalah, of mysticism, of immanence of God, and took the Rabbono Shalom and brought it down to us. And it revolutionized the Jewish experience in that it emphasized the role of the everyday common man in their relationship with the Rabbono Shalom. Is there anything new about that, that every person has a relationship with the Rabbono Shalom? There's nothing new about that. Is there anything new about the fact that, you know, there's an emphasis, we have to emphasize working on our davening? Is there anything new about the fact that we need to focus, hone in on the fact that Melocha La'olam Kavodo, that God is everywhere? It's not new, but the emphasis is a little bit different. This is a beautiful point. One of the people I look up to and learn from a tremendous amount is Dr. Abraham J. Tversky. So some of you familiar, he has over 60 books. He wrote a tremendous amount. So this is one of my books that I enjoy from him. It's called Not Just Stories. It's a book of Hasidic stories. But at the end, he has an epilogue. It's called And Just What Is Hasidus? And he makes this point, and it's such an interesting observation. He says that, you know, exactly what we just said, that there's nothing, if you break down Hasidus into its component parts, there's nothing new. You know, the Kabbalistic parts are there from the days of Kabbalah, the idea of acts of tzedakah and chesed and tefillah. Yes, Hasidus contained the features that existed in pre-Hasidic Judaism, and we can find them all in Torah literature that preceded the Baal Shem Tov. So, what's unique? But for all of these to be brought together in the way that they were, that was the uniqueness of Hasidus. That's what he says. He himself is a Chassidish Rebbe, so it's good. You know, if people, what do I know about Chassidus? Not so much, but he really knows. And he points out that the Baal Shem, the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, the Vilna Gaon, and Rav Chaim Voloshin lived in the same time, all the same time. And they're all basically, in his assessment, not mine, are all intents and purposes, they're all overlapping. They can all be, he says, they can all be considered Chassidic texts, right? Even though the Gaon was known as the Chassid Mivilna, happens to be the Gaon was very opposed to the idea of Chassidus. But he says, when you take two buildings that are the same structurally, but you paint them in different colors, so they are perceived as different, and they speak to people differently. So the world of Chassidus, it brought a lot of freshness. It emphasized things in different ways. And because of those different emphases, it connected with people in specific ways. So I bet if we went around the room, we could probably find out that many people in this room descend from Hasidic backgrounds. So my family, both on my father's side and my mother's side, come from strong Hasidic backgrounds. And these are communities that began to explode, not just expand, explode over the end of the 18th century and into the 19th century. So some of these themes, emphases are on Yichud Hashem. You know, the biggest idea that to me is so powerful that we need to constantly be reminding ourselves of, and again, it's not new, the Shulchan Aruch, you open the first page of Shulchan Aruch, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, God is in front of me all the time. So it appears already right in black on in the most classic halachic text. But in Chassidus, the idea of serving Hashem and the presence of Hashem and the consciousness that there is this level of godliness that exists in the world that's more than what we just see, that takes on a central focus. So therefore, dveikus, clinging to God and being, you know, thinking about that and being meditative about it, that's a major thing. The fact that God is real, that's very important. I would even suggest, I don't know anything, so I'm not the one to speak, but I would submit that one of the things that we could use today in our lives, I could speak for myself, in the lives of our children, in the lives of our shuls and schools and communities, is a greater emphasis on the fact that God is real. That there is a Ribono Shel Olam. Again, it's not new. The notion of tefillah exists, it's ubiquitous. But Chassidim put a great emphasis on that. So the notion of hisbodedus, of going out and speaking to God, so that it's an expression of the fact that we understand that God is real. So in those days, hisbodedus meant going into the forest. Today, hisbodedus is very easy. Today, you can drive down the street and you can talk to the Ribono Shel Olam, and if someone looks at you in the car, they don't think you're nuts. They think you're talking on the Bluetooth. You can have hisbodedus in the car and nobody will think you're weird. You can. But it's the consciousness, it's the idea that the Ribono Shel Olam is their Melocha Olam Kavodo. Now, some could potentially confuse, I think I heard this maybe once from Dr. Lamb, Shalom be well, that there's a difference between Melocha Olam Kavodo, that everything is the Ribono Shel Olam. Like if you learn the Sefer HaTanya, the Tanya points out that, at least in the Tanya's formulation, nothing really exists outside of the Ribono Shel Olam willing it to exist on a regular basis. So you could take that as pantheism. Well, if God energizes this table to exist, that means there's godliness in the table, that means you should worship the table. No, that's not what it means. It means you should worship God, but you should understand that the energy of God, the way that I'm learning now with one of the Chavrei HaKolel, we're learning in Chizuk Seder, we call it just parenthetically, we call it Chizuk Seder because as a chassid, I thought it was a little strange to institute Musar Seder in the Kolel, so we have Chizuk Seder. Chizuk Seder. So the Baal, so he says it's like the analogy between the Baal HaTanya writes, the analogy between the sun and the rays of the sun. So the sun is the source of the rays, but the rays aren't really independent of the sun. It's just the energy that's manifest. So the Ribono Shel Olam is the source of everything, and it's the energy of God when it says Yehi Or, that there should be everything, and then Yehi, etc., all the words are manifest. So this is a major idea. But if that's true, wait a second. If really mamish everything is godliness, it's almost, according to the Baal HaTanya, it's almost like we don't really exist 100% because we only exist to the extent that the Ribono Shel Olam enables us to exist in this energy. So then, where is he? I don't see God. And a whole lot of people out there don't see him. So there's a dichotomy. On the one hand, you're telling me that there's this whole spiritual world, this whole spiritual reality that's out there. You just have to tap into it. You just got to realize that energy that when the Ribono Shel Olam said Yehi Or, he didn't just say Yehi Or. He's saying Yehi Or, whatever that means, that energy is coming out right now that there should be existence. And yet you don't see him. So this is what a major theme in Chassidus is called Yichud Hashem, of bringing things together. Because you have this brokenness. You have the godliness itself, the Ribono Shel Olam, the Or Ein Sof himself. But that's hidden. It's not apparent. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then there's the Shechina, the presence of the world, that's hidden in the world. So you know what our job is going to be? Our job is going to bring those two together. Is to say, there is godliness in the world. Bring it out. Bring the actual Ribono Shel Olam, the spiritual energy, out into the world. So that's why before, let's say some are familiar with it before davening, some people say it before Sefiras Omer. In the Hasidic circles, they say it before every mitzvah, they say the phrase, L'shem Yichud Kud Shebrichu U'Shechinte. So what do those words mean? L'shem Yichud, Li'achay means to bring together, Echad, Kud Shebrichu, the Holy One, blessed be, and the Shechina, to bring them together. What does that mean? It means that there is a concept of godliness that's, or Ein Sof that's perfect, but it's hidden away. And then there's the world, the God that we encounter in the world that's very hidden. And what we're trying to do is to bring those together, to bring godliness out into our world. That's going to be our job. So Yichud Hashem is a major focus in the world of Chassidus, because it's being conscious, being sensitive to the fact that these two worlds exist. So where is this happening? So the Baal Shem HaKadosh is living in Mezhebuz, which is, I've never been to Eastern Europe, but it's, if you, I went on Google Maps to find it. It's a small town in the Ukraine. And the Baal Shem HaKadosh has several students, two chief pupils. One is known as the Toldos Rabbi Yaakov Yosef of Polonia, and the other one is Reb Dov Ber. Reb Dov Ber, known soon to be as the Maggid of Mezrich. And if you want to learn more about them and some of the other great Hasidic masters, this is a great, great small book by Arya Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, an expert. You talk about an expert in Hasidus. This man knew everything about Hasidus and Kabbalah and a lot of other things. So he has a beautiful work here called Hasidic Masters, where he talks about the development of the Baal Shem HaKadosh and then the Maggid of Mezrich. And the Mezrich Maggid, then, he was kind of the successor of the Baal Shem, and he had several Talmidim. So one of his Talmidim came to connect with him was a very, very pious, incredibly pious tzaddik. His name was Rav Meshulam Zussman of Anapolia. But people called him, and he called himself, Zusha. Zusha of Anapolia. And Zusha of Anapolia was an unbelievably pious man. He became connected with the world of Chassidus, and he schlepped along his brother, also a great tzaddik, both great Talmidei Chachamim, great Gaonim, named Rabbi Elimelech. Their father's name was Avram, Rabbi Avram, and he had two sons, Rabbi Meshulam Zussman and Rabbi Elimelech. And it was first Rabbi Zusha who became interested in the world of Chassidus, and he schlepped his brother Rabbi Elimelech. They came to Mezrich, and they became great disciples, disciples of the Maggid of Mezrich, the Mezrich Maggid, and they became founders. And specifically, Rebbe Elimelech became a founder, a founding pillar of Polish Chassidus. Because he settles in a town called Lezhensk. His grave, which I've never been to as a Kohen, grave hopping is not on my line of work, but I got a picture. This is the grave, the Tzion, on the front cover, Ponitman Adonenu Rabbeinu Ish Elokim Harav Rebbe Elimelech. I'm sorry, his father's name was Eliezer, not Avram. Ben Arab Rab Elozer Lipman, the author of Noam Elimelech. He dies in Shnas. What does it say there? Tough
Nun.
I can't read it. He died in 1787. 1787. So if you open to the first page, thanks to Google Maps, you see where the little here we are, Mark is. That's Lezhensk. And you can see where that is. This, the line is demarcating. On the left side is Poland. You see that says Poland there. On the right side, on the bottom of the line, that's Ukraine. And on the top, that's modern-day Belarus, where it says Pinsk. So Pinsk is in Belarus. I don't read Cyrillic, so I don't know what these other things are saying. But if you go to the right, you see where it says Lvov. Lvov is in modern-day Ukraine. You see to the right, to the east of Lezhensk is Lvov, to the left is Krakow, to the north is Lublin. So on the bottom map, which I got from this thing called Jewish Gen, it's a genealogical society online, you see the bottom is the borders of an area called Galicia. And this includes, you could see, this circle is Rimnov. On the right hand, you could see all the way at the eastern edge of Galicia's Tarnopol. So Tarnopol, if you go back to the top map, oh, it's not in this map on the top one. Oh, yeah, no, it's not. But you see where Lvov is. If you go One tooth. There's on the eastern side. There's Tarnopol, and that's then
that's right here.
It is there.
Yeah,
oh, thank you. Okay, so south, a little bit south and east of Lvov on the top map is Tarnopol, and it's on the bottom map. You could see it. That's on the eastern edge of this of Galicia, and then further to the left, you see Lvov, Tarnov, Biala. So this area in southern Poland, which you could see, it's got like a little bit of Poland, a little bit of Ukraine. This area is known as Galicia. And so Rebbe Elimelech of Lezhensk is right here in the heart of Galicia. Anybody here Galicianos?
My mother.
Your mother, okay. So my father's family comes from Barnov, which is a town, if you could like zoom in on Google Maps to the little towns with four shanties, that's probably what it would look like today. So this becomes Rebbe Elimelech of Lezhensk, right in this heart of Galicia and Poland. This becomes a center of the world of Hasidus. So much so that there became differences between, and then later even more, differences between Polish Hasidim, Galiciano Hasidim, and Ukrainian, the original Hasidim, you know, Rebbe Baruch Meshbej and others, the Degel Machne Ephraim, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov back in Meshbej. And then, of course, it spreads and spreads and spreads. So Rebbe Elimelech of Lezhensk, he's born in 1717, and in 1772, the Mizritcher Magid passes away. So he becomes one of the chief successors of the Mizritcher Magid for 15 years until his passing in 1787. And after he passes away, his son, Elazar, was named, I think, from his father, collects his Shabbos drushes and publishes them under the title Noam Elimelech. Now, however, the Rebbe Melech did see everything that's in here, but he instructed him that it should not be published until after his passing. So even though it was published after his death, the teachings in the Noam Elimelech were reviewed by the Rebbe Elimelech himself.
So the cover of the front is the teachings or the son's cover?
It's the Rebbe Elimelech of Lezhensk, his kever.
Okay.
And these are his teachings. They were edited by his son, but he reviewed them before they were published after he passed away. So I'm not an expert in anything, certainly not in Rebbe Elimelech of Lezhensk. But one of the common themes that you'll find in many of the writings about the Rebbe Elimelech in different works is Rebbe Elimelech's emphasis on the role of the tzaddik. And this is something that shapes the future of Hasidus, especially Hasidus in Poland and then Hungary, in Galicia, is the role of the tzaddik. That the tzaddik is kind of like a spiritual superman who is able to live in both worlds. We said before that in Hasidus we're very conscious of the fact that there is the spiritual world and then the world that we see with our eyes. So the tzaddik is living in both worlds and he's able to bring some of the spiritual energy from the spiritual world and translate that into goodness in this world. And for that reason, people would go to tzaddikim, they would go to Rebbe Elimelech, they would give him a kvittel, they would give him a little name with somebody's name on it, they needed a refuah, they needed a yeshua, they needed a parnasa, a bracha, whatever it was, and they would bring a pidyon, a few dollars to support the Rebbe's court. And that was kind of the way to connect with the tzaddik. People would go for Shabbos, he would speak at Chalashudas, etc. Now this idea of healing the masses, the folk healing, so to speak, was already begun by the Baal Shem. It was called a Baal Shem Tov. He had a Shem Tov because he was known as a healer, as a miracle worker as well. And Rebbe Elimelech really emphasized this. So the piece of Torah that we're going to study together right now, this is right here in this week's parasha, the Noam Elimelech. And so many, I haven't seen even a fraction of them, but so many of the pieces that I've seen in the Noam Elimelech are about the role of the tzaddik. And look at how he sees the role of the tzaddik in its most unanticipated context. I'm on the bottom of the second column where it starts, O Yomar. Ve'ela ha-mishpatim, these are the mishpatim. So if you're reading this pasuk, when you're going to hear it in shul on Shabbos, what are you going to hear? Ve'ela ha-mishpatim asher tasim lefnehem. These are the laws that you will put before them. And what laws are we going to hear? What are the laws about? slaves, interpersonal responsibilities, commerce, tort law, all those kind of things. Mishpatim. Says Rabbi Elimelech of Luzhensk, this is a different way of looking at it. Ve'eila mishpatim asher lufneim, asher tasim lufneim. Dehine, behold, k'siv, it says, melech b'mishpat ya'amid eretz. A king, it's a pasuk, the melech b'mishpat, in justice, ya'amid eretz, he establishes the land. Dehine, he says, look, there are two kinds of tzaddikim. It all comes back to the tzaddik. Yesh tzaddik asher biyado hadinim lahamtikam ulahofkam larachamim. There is a tzaddik who has such great spiritual power that he can take the dinim. Dinim are, meaning, the criticisms of the Jewish people. The harshness, the judgment against us from the Rabbona Shalom, that we deserve to be criticized. This tzaddik can take them, ulahamtikam, and to sweeten them, and to transform them, ulahofkam larachamim. V'zeu, and that's what it means in the pasuk, melech, a king, b'mishpat, mishu, rotzalomar, mishu b'madregazoshu, melech al ha-mishpat. It doesn't mean melech, a king. It's totally, this is like a Chassidus 101, where you take a verse, and you totally transform the meaning of that verse based on a secret inner tradition. Meaning, a king who can rule over the judgment, that's the tzaddik. Shu melech ala mishpat, dahainu ala dinim, yamid eretz. We'll stand because of that. We will exist because of that. Because there are tzaddikim who valiantly are able to transform the judgment against us. You know, some of them wrestle with God. No, no, then Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev very famously would argue with God and say, Ribbono Shel Olam, he would come to Ribbono Shel Olam on Yom Kippur, and he would say, look, you know, we have to do a trade. I have a book, said the Holy Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, I have a book of all of the crises, all of the calamities that happened this year. All right? Let's do an exchange. I'll give you all of the catastrophes that you gave to us, and you give us mechila for all of our averus. And this is going to touch on the second point of Rabbi Melech about being an Oev Yisrael, loving Jews, etc. That's the second half. But this focus right now on the role of the tzaddik. And the end of that pasuk of Melech b'mishpat yamid eretz, v'ish trumos yehersena. What does the words v'ish trumos yehersena mean on a regular basis? You know, if you open that pasuk, it means v'ish trumos, a man of, what's a truma?
An offering.
An offering. A person who goes out collecting handouts, yehersena. If the king, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, if the king is self-sufficient, Melech b'mishpat, if he has justice, so then you'll have a just society. But if he's an ishtrumos, if he's looking for handouts from everybody, so he can't judge favorably and fairly, because he's always worried about his next sandwich. So that's the pasuk. But then he says, "Vishtrumos yersena d'yesh tzaddik shu menase umerim es ha'olam tamid la'Hashem yizbarach." There's an even greater tzaddik. There's one tzaddik who's melech b'mishpat. He is the king, meaning the tzaddik who rules. He can break the dinim against us. But then there's another tzaddik. V'ish trumos. What is truma? It also means to lift up. There's a man who lifts the whole world. Now, top of the next column. He inspires everybody to serve God. V'atzadik hazeh hu yeros es hadinim. He, what does it mean? V'ish trumos, the man of trumos, yeher sena, he will break it. It means he will break the judgment against us. You know why? Because he'll inspire all of us to follow him in godliness. Shelo yovo klal uchlal ve'enu tzorach lamtikam. He doesn't need to transform criticism against us because we won't be criticized. Because we'll all be inspired Jews. Two kinds of tzaddik. V'zeu ve'eila ha-mishpatim. This is how he translates the words. Ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim lefnehem. That you should put before them. Rotz lomar hadinim tasim lefnehem o lahamtikam lerachmim o bederach hasheni la'akvam sholiyimtzu v'lo yavo klal uchlal. These are the laws that you should put in front of us. Meaning, these are the judgments. These are the criticisms against the Jewish people. Put in front of them, how are you going to deal with them? What kind of a tzaddik are you going to be? Are you going to be the tzaddik, which is a great level, a great tzaddik, who can forestall anything bad happening to Jewish people? He's going to wrestle with God. Or are you going to be the tzaddik who's going to inspire everybody to do the right thing? And then there won't be any need. So two things that are important about this verse. Number one, you see how it's really the role of the tzaddik to protect the generation, to daven on our behalf. But it's also, and this is the second point, it's, and this is an idea that's developed by a later Hasidic master at great length, the Teferet Shlomo of Shlomo of Radomsk, that it's the role of the tzaddik, the real, the great tzaddik, is to worry about the people in the generation. There is an element of Bein Adam LaMakom, of relationship with God, and there is an exclusiveness to this relationship in a certain sense, and that people connect to the tzaddik so that they can be almost, not vicariously, but by extension connected to God. But it's the role of the tzaddik to think about not just himself, primarily is to think about the generation, think about others. And this is the second emphasis of Rav Elimelech of Lizhensk. The first emphasis is on the role of the tzaddik. It's a beautiful, amazing story. For some who are familiar with this book, this work by Martin Buber, who himself became fascinated in the world of Chassidus. So he tells a story here about Rav Elimelech of Lizhensk. The Rav Elimelech was living in Galicia, but apparently the emperor in Vienna issued an edict that was going to make the Jews all over in Austria and Vienna and Poland, it was going to make everybody miserable. So there was a man by the name of Reb Feivel who came to Reb Elimelech of Lizhensk, and he said, it came to him one night in the Beis Medrash, he said, I have a din Torah with the Rabbonu Shel Olam. I have to bring God, I have to bring a suit against God. So Reb Elimelech said, look, you know, courts don't operate at night. Rabbinic courts, there's no mishpat at night. Come back tomorrow and we're going to establish a bezdin that you can take the Rabbonu Shel Olam to court. So who comes tomorrow? So he says, no problem. He comes back tomorrow. And who sits down? Rev Yisrael of Koznitz and Rev Yaakov Yitzchak of Lublin. See, these were two in and of themselves. They became great Hasidic masters. Part of Rabbi Lamelech's incredible influence were his Talmidim. Some of the greatest Hasidic masters in the next generation of Hasidus were direct disciples of Rabbi Lamelech of Lizhensk. So one of them was Rav Yisrael of Koznitz, who is known as the Koznitzer Magid. The next one, Rev Yaakov Yitzchak of Lublin, is known as the Choza, the seer of Lublin. Then the Oy of Yisrael, the Apterov, Rev Naftali of Rupshitz, Rev Mendel of Rimenov, many other Polish, people, if you heard these names, they were all disciples of one man, Rav Elimelech of Lizhensk. So Rav Elimelech says they're going to they're going to have a din Torah. So he comes back, Feivel comes back tomorrow to Rav Elimelech, and he sits down with the Choza, soon to be the Choza of Lublin, and with the Koznitzer Magid, And the Rebbe Lamelech says to Rebbe Feivel, he says, so what's your din Torah? He says, look, I don't have so much koach. So Rebbe Lamelech says, no, I'll give you the koach. So he says, I have a din Torah against God. It says in the Torah, ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. And the Gemara says, drasha, avadai hein v'lo avadim l'avadim. We are servants of God. We are the children of God. We're servants of God. And we're not servants to anybody else. And yet, look at us. We are living miserable lives, and we're servants to these Polish noblemen. So it's not fair. So why is it? So Rabbi Lamelech says to him, okay, so you know what the truth is? You know the answer is God will answer you because he'll say that we did Averus, so we got what we deserved, so we have to be servants to this regime. But the truth is, you've both spoken. I spoke on the behalf of the Rebbe Shel Olam. So now we have to debate. The problem is that you can't have a judge conference when the litigants are there. So everybody has to leave the room. So Feivel, you're going to leave the room. And the problem is that the Rebbe Shel Olam, you can't leave the room because you're everywhere. So we're just going to make an announcement, said Rebbe Elimelech, that even though the Rebbe Shel Olam was still here, we are not going to be influenced and intimidated by the Rabbonu Shel Olam. Okay. They sat quietly. Imagine now, Rebbe Elimelech of Lizhensk, the Choz of Lublin, and the Koznitzer Magid. They sit quietly for an hour with their eyes closed. And after an hour, they called in Reb Feivel. And they said, the verdict is, you're right. And at that hour, the verdict in Vienna, the edict in Vienna, was rescinded. That's the Maisa. That's the Maisa. Now, I didn't make it up, of course. It's an Emes Maisa. It's a true Maisa because it appears in Tales of Chassidim by Maran Hoover. But that's part of the whole... That's right. But this idea that the tzaddik has that kind of power, that's what it's about. But there's a whole other side to it. Shlomo Carlbach used to tell the story, Zichron Levrach, used to tell a story about Rabbi Elimelech of Lezhensk, and then I found a similar story. Now, when you find Chassidish stories, they don't always fit exactly the same nusach in the different sources, but it's the same story told in different language, that in the kitchen, Rabbi Elimelech's kitchen, there wasn't always a shalom v'shalva. It wasn't like everybody was, always getting along. Sometimes in the kitchen, in a workplace environment, there's a little bit of strife. But what happened every Friday afternoon? Every Friday afternoon, Rabbi Elimelech would go into the kitchen, and the cook, and the kitchen staff, and the help, and everybody, they would ask each other for mechila. I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings this week. There's a lot of stress in the kitchen, a lot of things going on in life. Every week, they would ask each other for mechila so they could enter into Shabbos in feeling a sense of peace. The idea of Ben Olam L'Chaveiro is huge in the world of Rabbi Elimelech of Lezhensk. Part of his life was this alternative reality of living with the Rabbonu Shalom so closely. So he and Reb Zusha, his brother, they went into Golos. Because if the Rabbonu Shalom is in Golos, so they need to connect with the Rabbonu Shalom and go into Golos. So they went undercover for over 3 years, wandering from town to town, sleeping in barns, just having various experiences. Unbelievable. Because the Rabbonu Shalom is in Golos, so they're going to be in Golos. So at one point, when they came back from Golos, Rabbi Elimelech shows up in town, and somebody sees him on the outskirts, and he says, "Come quick! Your son Elazar is very sick." So he rushes home, runs into the house. He sees his wife, and seen her for, I don't remember if this was after a year or 3 years. They went for at least 3 years. "What happened to Elazar? Is he okay? Is he okay?" She says, "He's totally fine. What's the issue?" He says, "I thought he was sick." He says, "Not sick." He says, "Oh, there's a boy down the street whose also name is Elazar, so he was very ill." So Rabbi Elimelech goes, Baruch Hashem. And then he looks up. He says, he's shaken up. Picks up his stick and he says to his wife, he says, "I have to go." He says, "Why are you going?" He says, "You see how much tikkun I need for myself? You know how much fixing I need for myself? Because when I heard that it wasn't my son, that it was somebody else's son, I breathed a sigh of relief." Is it not true that we're all bottom lamakom? Is it okay that somebody else's kid should be sick as long as it's not my sick? My kid that's sick? Obviously, I need to work on the tikkun for my nefesh. Picked up a stick and he went back to Golis. He went back to wandering. Because it's not just about worrying only about yourself and your Ben Adam L'Makom, it's also worrying about Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. And on the next page of your packet, you'll see, I'm sorry, got cut off, the title got cut off. Some have the practice to say this every day before davening. Because the Rebbe Ben Melech wrote a tefillah before davening. Because we're unfortunately on such a far level to speak to Rebbeinu Shalom, to be in the presence of the Rebbeinu Shalom, that we need to ask God to help us to daven. We need a daven to daven. That's how much help we need. So he talks about in the beginning of the prayer how we're so lowly and we're so insignificant and we're so pathetic and please, please help us to daven. But how does he conclude the passage? This became a famous song in the last couple of years. But look on the left side on the fifth, sixth to last line of the davening before davening. If you would ask me what to daven for before davening, it would have to be meditating on godliness. But that's not what he concludes. Va'adarabah. What should we think about? What should we meditate on? What should we daven for before davening? Adarabah, the first word on the line is Acherim. But the word Adarabah became a song by Avram Fried, whatever. Tein belibenu shenira kol echad malas chavereinu velo chesronam. When we see other people, what should we see? We should see the good in them. Malas chavereinu. And not what's lacking in them. We should speak to people nicely. Va'ayala shum sina me'echad al chaveru chalila. Ustechaze kiskashusenu ba'ava elecha. And through that we should come close to the love of God. So what's going on here? What does getting along with my friends have to do with the proper davening? The answer is that it's the same shorish amid of Ava, that if we cultivate Avas Yisrael, we can cultivate Avas Hashem. It's not just enough to say we're going to develop our Avas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to meditate on godliness, we're going to be in Golos and only think about our relation with God. We have to think about Avas Yisrael, we have to think about the love of others. So much so that it becomes integrated into the way that we daven. You can't really daven if you're angry at other people. If your Ben Olam HaChaveru was lacking, so your Ben Olam HaMakom was lacking. So at the same time, you know, it was living at the same time, the Alter Rebbe of Lubavitch, in Liadi, so he had a practice that before he would start davening, he would say, I'm a kabbal on myself, the mitzvah of, not the mitzvah of Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid, of Avas Hashem. V'hafta l'recha kamocha. And I think it's in Chabad Sidurim. If you open up a Chabad Siddur, I think in the front of that Siddur, it says, the person is mekabel on himself, the mitzvah of, v'hafta l'recha kamocha. That's how you get ready for davening. So these are core beliefs, core fundamental principles. And we'll conclude with the last piece, which we're not going to go through, but just so you should realize the intensity and the greatness of the great Tzaddik Rebbe Elimelech. So he wrote for us a little, what's called a tzetel katan, the little note. This is not the whole thing. There are 17 points in the tzetel katan. And Rebbe Elimelech encouraged his chassidim to read it repeatedly and memorize it and study it and restudy it. And I'm going to conclude with this just because we should realize at what kind of a stratospheric level, spiritual level, Rebbe Elimelech is living on. Now, he's suggesting we all aspire to this. If this is if you're at this level, this is amazing. Okay? B'choleis, we're just going to do the first one because he comes back to it. Okay, you ready? This is his level of consciousness. The tzetel katan. B'choleis, at all times, shu ponim min ha-Torah u'befrat k'shu yoshiv bata levado b'cheder. When you're not learning and you're sitting alone by yourself in your room, o sheshochev al mitaso ve'enu yochel lishon, or you can't sleep, should meditate on the positive commandment of being Mekadesh Hashem. Alright, maybe it's not the best idea we should end this year with this, but let's do it anyway. You should imagine and envision in your mind there is an enormous fire and a furnace that is billowing and burning to the heavens. V'hu b'shvil kedushas Hashem yizborach shover estivo, and you break your nature. Umapil es atzmo le'esh al kedushas Hashem yizborach. You throw yourself into the fiery furnace for the purpose of sanctifying the name of God. Umachshava tova hakadosh baruch hu mitzarfa l'maisa, and that good thought, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will consider it as if you did that. V'nimtza she'eno shochei v'yoshev batel rak mekayim mitzvas asei d'oraisa. So you're not wasting your time, can't fall asleep. You are already being mekayim the mitzvas asei of v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. And therefore, you imagine yourself as if you are throwing yourself into the fiery furnace for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he goes on, not everything is on this intense level, but you see the level of intensity of devotion. It's good just to be aware that there were people who lived on this level, that level of devotion and Mesiris Nefesh to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And obviously that's for the tzaddik. It's not for every person to be able to, on day one, live on that level. But the idea that these concepts, the intense devotion to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that people were meditating when he says, you should think of this when you say Shema, as if you're throwing yourself into a fiery furnace. And there were many people, many generations of great tzaddikim, who we know, even if they didn't learn the tzetel katan, they lived by this. And they did they were moser nefesh in unbelievable different ways. And much of it comes from the great energy, the verve, from the world of Chassidus. Now, of course, it's in the world of Chassidus, simcha is a great emphasis. You don't see in Chassidic circles people running around saying, you know, I'm depressed because I'm throwing myself into a fiery furnace today. It's the opposite. It's the sense of hislavos, that brand, that furnace that drives us to be excited about our avodas Hashem. That's going to be the emphasis of Chassidus. So this is one teaching and one perspective that we can take away from the great Rebbe Rebbe Melech of Lizhensk, the Noam Ali Melech. Okay, next week we will not have the